On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. 50 years ago today, Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law. It prohibited discrimination on the basis of race, religion, gender, or national origin. It outlawed unequal application of voter registration requirements. And it ended segregation in schools, workplaces, and public accommodations. To mark the anniversary of this landmark legislation, we're going to revisit a conversation I had with Shirley Sherrod. She and her husband Charles have been civil rights activists since the 1960s. Mr. and Mrs. Sherrod live in Albany, Georgia, where they lead the Southwest Georgia Project, which works primarily with women farmers. They also run an organization called New Communities, an agricultural training center in Georgia modeled on the concept of the Israeli kibbutz. 4 years ago this week, Shirley Sherrod was fired from her position as the Georgia USDA State Director of Rural Development. A right-wing blogger, Andrew Breitbart, doctored a videotape to make it appear that Ms. Sherrod was making racist remarks about a white farmer in a speech to the NAACP chapter in Coffee County, Georgia. Breitbart's maliciousness was quickly exposed. Ms. Sherrod received apologies from her bosses and President Obama, and she was offered another position in the administration, but she chose to turn that offer down. She's written a book about her life and work in the civil rights movement. It's called The Courage to Hope: How I Stood Up to the Politics of Fear. When I spoke to Ms. Sherrod in January, I asked her to recap the steps that led to her firing in 2010.
The speech that I gave included information about my transformation when I realized that, yes, there are issues about racism, but also about being poor. And I've used my experience to say to people, you know, it's just time for us to come together and work across racial lines on some of the issues that we are all dealing with. So he took parts of that speech as I recounted my efforts to assist this white farmer who had come to me 24 years prior to that speech for help. And he cut, spliced, whatever they do to take parts of it out and to make it appear that as a government worker, I had refused to help a white farmer. As it unfolded, my bosses at USDA initially put me on administrative leave for, and that lasted maybe an hour, and then I was asked to resign. And then asked, before I could drive back to the office, they asked me to pull to the side of the road and use my BlackBerry to submit my letter of resignation.
They were clearly in a hurry to have you get this.
Yes, I was told that Glenn Beck had decided to make me the subject for his show that night, and that's why they couldn't even wait until I could get back to the office to get the letter of resignation. And I actually sat on the side of the road in heavy traffic typing a letter of resignation.
And Fox News aired this tape that Breitbart had doctored. The CBS affiliate in New York aired it. Clearly the administration heard about it, and they, and even the NAACP, I mean, Benjamin Jealous and others, criticized you for these remarks as represented in this tape. There were one or two bloggers, I think, who raised some questions about its authenticity. But you, this is a sort of classic tale of someone being, you know, I guess the term of art is thrown under the bus.
Right.
I can't imagine how that must have felt. Here you are, the first black person to hold your position with the USDA, and you're fired by the administration of the first black president in the history of the United States. I can't imagine what was going through your mind at that time.
It was hard to deal with initially. It was, there's such a great shock, you know, that this was happening. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from and why. And then I learned that the NAACP had condemned me, and I just kept asking, who are these people? No one attempted to talk to me.
Shirley Sherrod, her book is called The Courage to Hope: How I Stood Up to the Politics of Fear. We spoke last January on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Ms. Sherrod, you write about the president in a very very critical way in the book, as one would certainly assume, given what his administration did to you. You say that if I, a child of segregation, had once dreamed of standing shoulder to shoulder with our first black president, I'd never imagined I could be so deeply shamed by his administration. It was a horrible blow. I realized that what had happened to me wasn't directly Obama's doing, and I doubted he'd known anything about it until after the fact. But I did feel that he had set a tone in his administration that had allowed it to happen. There was zero tolerance for anything that would bring race to the forefront. We were supposed to be colorblind, which was another way of saying that our supposedly race-transcendent president was terrified of race. What do you think the opportunities are for President Obama now? And do you think that he is approaching the issue, the very volatile issue of race, differently in this, his second administration, as opposed to his first?
You know, I'm still not sure that he is. And I can understand every time he's attempted to speak out, there are people willing to jump on him. The Trayvon Martin, when he made a statement about Trayvon Martin, you know, there were so many who were ready to criticize him. And race, you know, race and racism is something that's so difficult for us to discuss, to deal with, and to deal with in this country. I don't know what it'll take. You would think that having the first black president would be something that could sort of move us forward. But, gosh, when you look at everything he's tried to deal with, when you look at everything, when you look at the reaction to anything he's tried to bring forth, you have to wonder, where are we going? Why are we doing this? Why can't we figure out how to get along? So I'm just not so sure I can understand why he would not want to really tackle the issue of racism. It would be just like anything else he's tried to bring forth and probably criticized even more for it.
And your story is made all the more poignant and incredibly sad, to my reckoning, by understanding your life story, which you tell so beautifully in this book, The Courage to Hope. Your father was murdered in cold blood by a white man, a man named Cal Hall,
yes,
in 1965.
Yes.
And your husband, Charles, was the head of what's been known as the Albany Movement and SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in Georgia. Your life as a civil rights activist shaped by this unbelievable injustice in your early life. You were 17 years old when your father was killed.
Right. I was a senior in high school, actually looking forward to leaving the South. And, you know, all of my plans were to go to school in the North and never live in the South again. But when my father was murdered on the night of his death, I made the commitment to stay in the South and devote my life to working for change. And that's what I've done for nearly 49 years now.
And let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. In 2011, sort of rekindled an organization that you had started some years earlier called New Communities. This is based on the example of kibbutzes in Israel. How does that work?
Well, you know, years ago, New Communities had its beginning back in 1968 when seven people went to Israel to study the kibbutz in hopes of starting a community. And that was an answer to people who were living on land owned by white farmers who would be asked to leave when they participated in the civil rights movement. At that time, we had 6,000, well, once after we created the organization, we were able to get our hands on 6,000 acres of land and actually became the first community land trust in the U.S.
Ms. Sherrod, your personal story is so amazing to me on so many levels. And one of the things that I keep coming back to is what you do with your anger for all of the injustice that you have endured. And I mean, I hate to sound like anger is like some bowling ball that you put in the closet or something, as if it's some separate thing. But how do you confront that, and how do you process that and move forward with your life and your work?
I know that if I'm angry, I can't think clearly. And that not being able to think clearly keeps me from being able to focus on the things that I need to do. So I've learned through the years to, I get angry now, but I learned how to process that so that it doesn't get in my way. You know, I try to come from a standpoint, too, of love. I try to live that life that God would want all of us to live so that I can do the work that's expected of me.
Well, it's easier said than done, and God bless for being able to pull it off. It's really quite something. One final question, if you wouldn't mind. In your reckoning, as you think about the experiences that you've had both recently and throughout your life and the work that you're doing now with New Communities, how does racial healing occur?
You know, in order for there to be any attempt at racial healing and racial reconciliation, you have to be able to honestly talk to each other. You have to be able to speak how you feel and how it affects you. And someone should be able to hear that and help talk through it to move forward. Have we had racial healing? You know, there's so much. I can't say that has happened, but I can say that it won't happen unless somehow we are able to sit down with each other to talk about the hurt, to talk about those who have hurt others, and try to see if we can put that where it should be at this time in our lives and figure out how to move forward.
Shirley Sherrod. I spoke with her in January from her home in Albany, Georgia. Her book is called The Courage to Hope, How I Stood Up to the Politics of Fear. We have more information about the book and about Ms. Sherrod on our website. Come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up on a special 4th of July edition of Maryland Morning, a conversation about the Constitution with David Stewart and a discussion with one of the Central Park Five and the directors of a documentary about their case, which resulted in a reported $41 million settlement, which was announced last month. In addition, we'll check in with Baltimore writer Rafael Alvarez. That's all coming up Friday morning on Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.